south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's begin with some news about the seminar. Unfortunately, we're going to have to postpone it. Remember, it was initially set up for the first week in November, November 4th. Well, as I've been warning you guys all along since about maybe three or four seminars ago, everyone could be my last, or at least last until further notice. You know, since about 2012, I was doing two seminars a year. Then COVID hit. The vax thing and the off and on lockdowns with various countries are still going on. Anyway, it's getting tougher and tougher to get the logistics to work out for putting on one of these things. The fact is, I don't have to or need to do these things, so they better be fun for me and not just loaded with stress and unknowns. For example, we always do lots of boots-on-the-ground trips, and since the COVID thing, some places won't let you bring in a big group anymore. So what was easy before is no longer a piece of cake. Arranging boots-on-the-ground trips to doctors' offices, hospitals, and clinics is getting harder to do. It's not a sure thing. They don't want crowds, even small ones, because the plague is everywhere, right? Ooh, scary. So anyway, the crazy logistics, plus the fact that just a couple of days ago, September 15th, the seminar early bird discounts ended. People signed up all right, but not enough to actually predict how many people are coming to make proper room reservations. That's the tough part, reserving the rooms way ahead of time, because you got to put down deposits. Usually by the day, the discounts expire. I have a nice solid number of people who've already paid so I can give that information to the hotels, because 90% of the people pay before the early bird discount expires. But in this case, I've got a whole bunch of people who've expressed interest but have not signed up yet. So that means I have no idea how many hotel rooms to reserve. You get the idea, right? So in this particular case, I've got a whole bunch of people saying they're going to sign up, but they haven't. So anyway, we're postponing the seminar till later next year or maybe never. You regular listeners know that for a long time I've been saying, since about 2018 anyway, I've been saying, if you're thinking about coming to one of my Expat Insider seminars and you're a procrastinator, you better jump on it now because this might be my last. Well, you thought I was fooling, huh? Now, that's not to say I won't be doing any more in the future, but you already know that the windows of opportunity are closing. It's getting harder and harder to get out of the country, to get your passports and residency, and get your dough transferred out of the country too. It's all getting more and more difficult. So anyway, that's the late breaking news on the seminar. Not to mention it's getting worse and worse with the airlines too. You know that if you've been traveling lately or in any time during the COVID thing. In fact, at the last seminar, at least a third of people's flights were late, by hours, some by days. That means there were lots of times when my people were hanging around the airport just waiting and waiting. Waiting till the last person got off the plane and then nothing. So then what do? That almost never happened before with previous seminars. If you've been traveling, you know what a nightmare airports are. And now they think nothing of canceling flights when you're already at the airport and waiting to board. That happened with people who came to the last seminar, and it's happened to me this year a couple of times. Talk about throwing a wrench into the works when you've got something planned, especially a big event like a seminar. So anyway, once again, the seminar's been postponed. We'll keep you posted if and when we have another, but it won't be this year. All right, on with the show. Speaking of getting out of Dodge or wanting to get out of Dodge or not being able to get out of Dodge, comes this email from Adam. He says, "Hey, Johnny, hope you're doing well. I'm doing some work on my house and was considering a water purification system. I remember that you had mentioned your custom water filtration system in previous shows. I believe you said that if we wanted to know the design, you could send one to us by email. Would you mind sending that to me? Thanks, man. Keep up the great work. P.S. Now for the sad part of this email. This is completely unrelated, but I thought you might be interested to hear a personal anecdote about the clown world up here in the U.S. and why it's time to get the hell out of Dodge. As for me, I was raised to live in a conservative religious state of Utah. My parents brought us up as Mormons. Even though many of us no longer practice, we all generally ascribe to very traditional values." He says, "Believe it or not, one of my sisters is raising her family here and chose to homeschool her children to protect from the negative social pressures of the government school system. Even after going to those lengths, one of their teenage sons, a 6'1", 230-pound obese 15-year-old, somehow got it into his head that he's not a boy, but a girl. My sister and her husband, not knowing what to do, trusted the system and took him to a doctor. Well, the doctor confirmed that the medical science is clear and settled. If the boy thinks he's a girl, then he is indeed a girl. Now, in my sister's mind, she has to follow doctor's orders. After all, what kind of mother doesn't listen to a medical professional? Her son is telling her he's a girl, and the doctor is confirming it. What choice does she have? So her son is now on testosterone blockers, being given estrogen, growing long hair, and now he's even forcing his voice to speak 3 octaves higher in order to sound highly feminized in a ridiculous sort of way. And of course, we, the family, have to refer to my nephew by his new female name and use female pronouns. I'm sure that at some point within the next couple of years, they'll perform the surgery and cut off his penis and insert some breasts. He can't legally drink, smoke, or even go to an R-rated movie without his parents' consent, but somehow he knows that permanent life-altering changes to his body are necessary. If it weren't so horribly tragic, it would sound like a very bad joke. Now, this kid's entire life is being completely wrecked because of the extremist ideology infecting our society. Then he says the insidious tentacles of the woke agenda have found their way even to the homeschooled nuclear family, all the way to the Mormons of Utah with their traditional Christian values. It's just one more sad piece of evidence that the once great American society is crumbling at an ever-increasing pace. How long, though, Johnny, until this reaches Latin America? That's what I want to know. Will we then need a plan C? Anyway, Johnny, thanks again. Take care of yourself. Signed, Adam, from the, quote, conservative state of Utah. Well, thanks for that little personal anecdote, Adam. Sorry to hear about it. If that isn't a reason to get the hell out of Dodge, get that plan B going, I don't know what is. You know, you read about that stuff and you say to yourself, what the hell's going on with the world? But when it happens right in your own backyard with your own family, that's when it's no longer idle chatter. It gets dead serious. Man, am I glad I don't live north of the border. Best thing I ever did was get the hell out of Dodge and move to Latin America. And sometimes not a day goes by when I don't tell myself that. I'm serious. Especially when I check the daily news reports. I almost think you guys up north are living in a bizarro world on another planet. In fact, Adam, I don't know how I would act. For example, if I went to a family get-together and my 15-year-old, 6-foot-something obese nephew all of a sudden showed up, sat down next to me, completely transitioned, you know, I wouldn't even know what to say to the guy, the girl. How could that situation be comfortable for anybody in the room? Think of the life this guy, girl, is going to have. At least as a tall, fat guy. Male, that is, if he excels, becomes a success. That's what sociologists will tell you most ladies are interested in a long-term mate. A successful, nice, honest guy, a good provider. When a guy's achieved some kind of status, looks aren't all that important in the mating and dating game. But on the other side, if you're a she, who is proportionally way out of the norm, well, it seems to me she's looking at a world of constant ridicule, pain, and hurt. The mating dating game for her is going to be extremely difficult and heartbreaking, to say the least. Not to mention he or she is looking at a lifetime of therapy. But you knew that already, right? So then is all that craziness coming to Latin America or coming eventually because of that lag time thing? Well, Adam, I have to say the woke wave of destruction has not rolled over Latin America. Not yet, anyway. Except it's trying to grab a toehold in guess where? Gringo expat areas. Because a certain class of socially retarded expats are bringing it down with them. You've heard me mention that before. But I'll tell you, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, you'll see none of that. However, when you're on the tourist trail, you'll always be able to find one or two, even a handful, of woke expat fakebook sites. The question is, what about transgender people in Latin America? Are there many down here? And how does society treat them? Well, you know what? Even though it's a very macho society, transgender people are here. Of course, they have to survive, so they work in traditional sort of female role type jobs. At clothing stores, boutiques, at hair, beauty, and aesthetic salons, as waitresses, nurses, you know, people helping professions. I've noticed you'll never see a transgender cop or a transgender person working on a construction site. They seem to stay away from those physical, manly professions. Of course, there's always a few closeted ones, but they're usually very easy to spot. At least in my experience, and that's what I've been told by many other people too. Of course, the average Latino thinks it's quite odd. The whole transgender thing and how it's blown up into such a big deal up in the States, they think it's a kind of contagion whose flames have been fanned in the U.S. Though Latinos in general don't seem to have anything against the trans thing, they still think it's pretty odd because 20 or 30 years ago, that stuff never really appeared down here. Sure, there's always been transvestites. They're called travestis here. but they weren't into actual transition with hormones, implants, and surgery. They just loved, you know, dressing up and looking like girls in more or less an extreme sort of way. But that whole thing with the hormones and surgery is very new down here. Now, what I've been hearing from some of my gay Latino friends, I know some gay guys, but I don't know any Latina lesbians. Though I've seen a few, I've never really sat down and talked to any. I don't know any. However, my Latino gay buddies tell me, for Latino guys that transition into girls, they're hypersexualized, always seem to go way too far with it. Way overboard on the makeup, the sexy clothes, the high heels, and the feminization thing in general. That's a word, right? Feminization? Can hardly say it. Funny thing, too, the Latino gay guys that I know, and I know three of them pretty well. Not that well. And, you know, we talk about that particular culture clash. They all know a few guys that have transitioned from men into female, but they know of no one who's done it in reverse, going from a woman to a guy with hormones and surgery and all that. They say that's very rare. Oh, and another thing, they tell me that in 99.9% of the cases where a guy transitions to a female, he gets the booty work done, but not all of it. Gets the boobs, the butt lift, the lipo, you know, to get the curves, the estrogen hormones, etc. They go quite a ways, but not 100%. They don't go through with the ultimate step and get that pee-pee lopped off. Now, is it that they're scared or don't have the money because it's a very expensive operation? Well, from what they've told me, going most of the way is enough for them. And as for the money, yeah, it's expensive, just like up in the States, and they don't have it. But somehow, most of them swing the boobs, the butts, and the hormone treatment. And sometimes even the laryngectomy, you know, getting that voice box Adam's apple protrusion knocked down a bit. Man, that's gotta hurt. And it's surprising, too, that in this very macho society, and it is, the local macho guys don't seem to mock the gays or the trans guys, or call them out on the street. Not like they used to, anyway. 20, 30 years ago, I used to see that, but not anymore. I mean, look, there are certainly many transvestites in Latin America. In every small, medium, and large town, the ones in the sex trade have their street corners to hang out on. And I believe Latino men have learned, at least by word of mouth, you don't mess with them. The word has been out for a long time that most transvestites, at least the ones that hang out on the corners in red light districts, can kick ass. You know what I mean by that, right? They grew up different in a macho society, and early on, they took a lot of abuse and learned how to fight back. Now, I'm talking about transvestites here. You know, they got their street corners and such. And the clients that pick these guys up, they're usually upscale married guys, by the way. That's what my gay buddies tell me. Their clients know these guys aren't fully transitioned, if you know what I mean. They tell me everyone kind of knows that. They've had some stuff done, but still have the main boy part. So that's the story, at least from what I can see and what my gay buddies have told me. They've also informed me that transvestites and people who transition just part of the way, what do they call them now, ladyboys, right? They get at least a small measure of respect because being that it's a macho society, they came up the hard way and had to express themselves sometimes physically. Though it is, up in the States and in the first world in general, much easier to be gay, transition, or go in drag, or be a transvestite, because first world society has become much more wide open and woke. It seems to me, and to a lot of my gringo and gringa buddies down here, the pendulum has really swung, practically, off its gimbal. Because it seems, if you're gay or transitioning up in the States, it's something to rejoice about. It's a badge of honor. But down here in Latin America, at least for the man on the street, life is tough. And being gay or transitioning, whatever, limits your options in the job market, etc. So life is all that much tougher. However, I gotta say, when you're walking around on the tourist trail or even slightly off the tourist trail, you see lots of gay and lesbian couples who are tourists. They've got that gringo advantage too. It was the same 20 or 30 years ago. When I'd see a gay or lesbian couple walking down the street, foreigners, tourists, they weren't treated differently. No one ever bothered them. Because, you know, the tourist trade is the lifeblood of a lot of these communities. Now, for a young adolescent, Latino or Latina, coming out as gay here in Latin America, or LGBT, WTF, XYZ, it's still pretty tough because of the macho male members in the family. Tougher than coming out as a young gay person up in the States, anyway. And I got that from the horse's mouth, too. My gay buddies down here tell me their mothers accepted it quite well. Their brothers and sisters, too. But their dads, in each case, all three of my buddies, their dads disowned them. And that trauma you carry with you all your life. That goes back to the macho society thing, of course. Part of the lag time thing, too. Which reminds me, back in Chicago a long time ago when I went to my 10-year high school reunion, I ran into two of my buddies there who we kind of knew were gay in high school, but they had girlfriends and all that, you know, covering it up. not quite out of the closet yet. And both of them told me at that reunion that their mothers took it well, but their fathers took it pretty hard. In fact, one of them, who was 100% Italian, he mentioned that after his dad found out, he'd hear a noise in the kitchen at 1 or 2 in the morning. It was his dad hitting the bottle all by his lonesome and sometimes even lightly sobbing. But that was then, a long time ago, the 1980s. But now, up in the States in the first world, from what I can see, now that the wokesters are in control of society, Hollywood, social media, and the IT companies, it's a badge of honor. Now, as for me, I've always said live and let live. And I've always had gay friends. What a cliche, huh? I mean, real friends that I hung around with. I'll tell you this, they're all older now, over 50. But each one of them has told me to a man that the wokesters and the LGBT, WTF, XYZ people have gone overboard. They've pushed things too far. I guess that's to be expected. As you get older, you become more rational. Anyway, that's my 2 cents again. And remember, you get what you pay for. Oh, and one last thing about the gay and transgender thing here in Latin America. It's not a dangerous topic to discuss with practically anyone down here, except that small, disgusting contingent of gringo expat wokesters. There's no walking on eggshells like it is up in the States, where you could get canceled or fired or worse for using the wrong pronoun. Speaking of pronouns, there are no pronoun issues at all here in Latin America. The language has genders, you know. Most nouns have a male or female gender. And since the language has genders, it's completely unwoke and can't be altered. Otherwise, you'd have to alter the whole dictionary. Although there are lots of idiot Latinos up in the States who are trying to neutralize the genders, like, for example, the second generation, the Latinx crowd. You've heard me mention that before. Well, it ain't going over down here, not at all. Only up by you, especially in the LA area. If you don't believe it, just pick up the LA Times. They've got a section in it now called the Latinx Times. It's pure Castro and Venezuelan socialism at its worst. Oh, and another thing, Latino women are not turning away from motherhood or dissing it, like many so-called liberated woke ladies that are doing up in the States. Latinas want a husband and kids, even though they know it's sort of a bad bet because of their Latin husbands' cheating ways. The disillusionment comes after the wedding. Sound familiar? Oh, and another thing. Latinas are not looking to get more masculinized, like so many feminists seem to advocate in the States. In fact, they are very proud of their femininity. Oh, and they'll never have a meltdown if you open the door for them or try to pay for something. They appreciate it. And a Latino or a Latina transgender person would never have a meltdown if you called them by the wrong gender. What do they call it in the States? Dead naming, right? Oh, no, we mustn't call a person by the name they have on their actual birth certificate now, huh? Man, such BS you guys have to put up with in the States? You must be biting your lip and rolling your eyes all the time. By the way, in Adam's email, that last email, he was asking for my water treatment system. Man, I'll tell you, it couldn't come at a better time, huh? You've been reading about all that water pollution up in the States? Entire city water supply is contaminated? Imagine that, getting a boiling order. That's absolutely medieval. Well, third world, anyway. Plus, you have all those micro and nanoplastic particles in there, too. The stuff people with a half a brain kind of thought existed in there, but no one ever talked about it till maybe this year. The studies are out there, not good. You're not even supposed to drink rainwater anymore. How about that? Even supposed pure rainwater in pristine parts of the world is filled with nanoplastic particles. And bottled water, that's no good either. Just do a search. You'll see, in many cases, that stuff's no better than tap water. Yet in some places, a 500 milliliter of bottled water will cost more than its equivalent in milk. And if you look milk up, you'll find that's not good for you either. Good for newborns and babies, but that's about it. After that, you're supposed to get weaned off the stuff. Why does that happen to every single mammal in the world except humans? Something's wrong with that picture. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. We've got this email from Dr. Maria. She says, "Hello, John. I love your shows and want to give you an expert's view on language accents. Since on a previous show you spoke regarding different languages and accents. As you guessed, I'm a dentist who does orthodontics as well. I learned from one of my orthodontics professors that there's a part of the middle ear that closes around 13 or 14 years of age. And that part allows a person to hear and mimic any specific language pronunciation. For example, she says, if let's say two brothers immigrate to the U.S., one is 13 and the other 16 at the time of arrival, then they enroll in high school. And later, they both attend university. Regardless of the level of education or intelligence, the younger one will speak English without an accent, and the older guy will have an accent. It might be a major or minor accent, but he will have an accent when speaking English." Okay, thanks for that, Dr. M. Very interesting. By the way, Dr. M, your email reminds me of a couple of conversations I've gotten into with some expats. You know, the part-time kind. They've got one foot in the U.S. or Canada and the other foot in some Latin American country. So they go back and forth now and then. Some are snowbirds, like quite a few Canadians who spend half the year in Canada and half the year in Costa Rica, Mexico, whatever. Anyway, over the years, I've heard quite a few stories that go something like this. Johnny, I went to my dentist in Toronto or Chicago. He told me I needed a crown or a bridge or a root canal, whatever. Maybe even two or three crowns and a bridge and a root canal. By the way, did you know the jury's out on root canals? Sure, dentists have been doing those things for 100 years, but guess what? They're discovering there's nothing really sterile or clean about them. In other words, there's some seepage between the root and the periodontal ligament. Turns out there's tiny little tubules with stagnant liquid in them. You'd think once the nerve's dead and it's been pulled out and replaced with an inert material, it'd be sterile or at least super clean, right? Turns out, you can look it up, there's always a tiny microscopic locus of infection around any tooth with a traditional root canal. That means your immune system's always trying to keep that inflammation down, no matter how slight it is. And you know, there have been many, many, even thousands of cases where people's general health has been improved when they've had a tooth or two or 10 with a root canal extracted. Does that mean don't have a root canal? Just pull it and leave a space there? No. You got to fill it with something, right? Or the teeth will shift and it looks ugly too. That's what bridges and titanium implants are for. Neither of them are perfect solutions, but hey, having a hole there, not good either. So then what about root canals? Well, there are ways to do root canals with ozone, homeopathic style, but not a lot of dentists are trained to do that. Now, about root canals, I have a few, and I'm not happy reading about the downside. Anyway, just for your information, lots of dentists whose mindset is in the 21st century, they're starting to read that root canals are not the inert, harmless things they thought they were years ago. They're finding if you've got some chronic disease that just isn't responding to other treatments, sometimes you take those teeth out and replace them with something else, you see various degrees of improvement. But hey, don't go yanking those root canals out yet. But as a last resort, if you have some issues that won't resolve, maybe. Just read up on it and do check on those holistic dentists in your area. There's always a few. They're everywhere. Anyway, we were mentioning how some expats who go back and forth from Latin America to the States or Canada, they'll go to their dentist in Canada or Chicago for a checkup, and he'll say you need a certain number of fillings or crowns, bridges, whatever. Then they'll get a second opinion with a dentist in Latin America because they heard how much cheaper things are. And lo and behold, when the dentist in Latin America gives you a treatment plan, you say, wait a minute, the dentist up in the States says I need a crown here and a bridge here, and you said, no, just here and here. In other words, and it's kind of a shock, it turns out that the Latin American dentist is always much more conservative in his treatment plan. So, for example, your dentist up in the States might say you need three crowns and four fillings, and your dentist in Costa Rica says you need two crowns and two fillings. So, at first glance, you might wonder, is my dentist up in the States gouging me? Is he padding the treatment plan just to cash in a little more? Well, not only is it not necessarily so, it's probably not true at all. Latin American dentists have a very different approach to their treatment plan based on two things. Almost no one in Latin America has dental insurance, and almost no one in Latin America can afford the Cadillac treatment. Now, what a lot of people don't know is that in dentistry, there's good, better, and best. Same thing with cars, appliances, computers. These are physical, material things, right? And when a dentist is fixing your teeth, he's putting in physical, material things. Some materials and techniques cost a lot more than others. It's just that you see in the U.S. and Canada and the rest of the first world, except in the U.K. where they're somehow known for their gnarly teeth. Funny thing, too, even wealthy British families have a number of members with terrible teeth. The Brits don't seem to care or notice. But boy, do us gringos and expats notice a bad rack of teeth. Yes, we do, and we assign a certain socioeconomic status to people with bad teeth, don't we? Point is, in dentistry, there's good, better, and best. And people with insurance, like most people in the States and Canada, are used to having the best or very high quality, something that'll last a long, long time. For example, you go to a dentist in the States because you got a big chip out of your molar. He says, look, if we put a crown on it, it'll last 20 years or so, well, as long as you floss. It'll cost, for example, $600, and your insurance will pay $450. That's $150 out of your pocket. Or we could put a big old filling on that thing. It might last 5 or 10 years or break off tomorrow. Then you'll definitely need that crown and maybe a root canal, too. And that big old filling will cost you $250. Your insurance will pay $200. That's $50 out of your pocket. Now, what do you think the patient's going to say? $150 out of my pocket, and I get 20 or so years out of the thing? Or $50 out of my pocket, and it might break tomorrow? That's how it'll go in the United States and Canada. But down here in Latin America, the same guy goes to a dentist. He, too, chipped a chunk out of his molar. Guess what? You'll probably never have that good, better, best discussion with your dentist. He'll just start working on it, and you'll walk out of there with a filling. Probably $100, maybe less. Though he might say, down the line, you might need a crown on that, but right now, you're good. In other words, there's a whole different treatment plan attitude in Latin America. Because dentists in Latin America are absolutely aware that people don't have much money. They make do and patch. They've got lots of experience. Now, of course, if a tooth is beyond repair with a regular filling, they're going to offer you a crown. But if there's a cheaper way to keep that thing going, extend its life. That's the route they'll usually take. That's why so many Latinos, even young Latinos and Latinas, have a couple of teeth missing, usually in the back because front ones get fixed, right? Because the teeth have failed and they can't afford a crown. Now, of course, things are a little bit different on the gringo tourist trail. As the gringos are piling in with their insurance plans, dentists only have to look in their mouths and see they're used to having Cadillac work done. I suppose these days we should call it Tesla or Lamborghini work, since the Cadillac brand's been slipping. It's out of favor now and more from the Frank Sinatra era. So dentists on the gringo tourist trail realize gringos maintain their teeth and they have Cadillac work done. They see what kind of work they come down with from the States. So they're adapting to that higher end kind of work too. So bottom line, it's up to you. You can tell your dentist to fix what's necessary, do the usual and customary, or tell them to give you the works, gringo style. It's, once again, good, better, best. Your choice. The problem is, as I see it in Latin America, there are three kinds of dentists as well. Good, better, best. And I'm sure it's the same in the States, but the thing is, how can you know good from better from best? After all, if you're at a party, whether it's up in the States or down in Colombia, if someone says, I broke a tooth, I have to go to the odontólogo. That's dentist in Spanish, also dentista. There'll always be one or two people around who will say, hey, go to mine, he's the best. Well, you know what he's really telling you? He's not telling you whether the guy's good, better, or best. He's just telling you the guy has a good personality and he doesn't hurt, not much. That's the only criteria that the general public has for whether they think a dentist is good or not. Unless, of course, you've had a front tooth worked on and it looks terrible. You know, people don't mention that stuff, but they sure notice. When someone's got an ugly, dark, twisted, or screwed up front tooth, man, that's a lasting first impression, isn't it? Especially on a female. Though I have to say, as a rule, Latinos and Latinas have pretty nice looking front teeth. Funny thing, too, the latest research in that department shows that when kids eat a lot of fresh, natural, crunchy things like fruits, vegetables, and nuts, like most Latin American kids, that extra biting pressure widened the arch and give more space for the teeth to come in nice and straight. And kids who eat processed, mushy diets, bread, cookies, Cheetos, Fruit Loops, they chew more softly and their jaws don't expand to accommodate the size of the teeth. Thus, more American kids need braces. I've got a great book that explains all that and more. If you want a copy, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. It's called Breathe, B-R-E-A-T-H-E.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.